Hello and welcome to yet another edition of The Om Show. Today, I am talking to the founder of a red hot, amazing headphone brand and company called Odyssey. His name is Sankar Thyagasamudram, which is one of the best headphones you can buy on the market. And I've been a huge fan for a very long time. And a friend of ours connected us via Facebook. The only good thing that comes out of Facebook is, you know, one-on-one connections. And we exchange a few messages, and here we are talking on this podcast. So Sankar, welcome.
Thank you, Om. Thank you for having me on this podcast.
So did I pronounce the name of your company and your name correctly?
Yeah, Odyssey. I named it, I was a big fan of 2001 A Space Odyssey. So at some point, we tried to get a domain name, and somehow we ended up with Odyssey as a company name.
Wow. And like, how long ago was that?
It was in late 2008-2009.
When you started the company?
Yes.
Okay. But before we start talking about the company, let's talk a little bit about you. Where do you come from? What's your story? And like, how did you end up with this company? So tell us, like, you know, take us through the early part of your life. Where are you from?
Sure. I'm from a small industrial town in Tamil Nadu, India, called Coimbatore. I went to school there, did my undergrad there, and I was very enamored with computer graphics. I wanted to, you know, so I came in 1999 to USC to do my master's. And my focus was on basically multimedia and computer graphics. So for a while, I worked in designing video cards and stuff from 2000 to 2013. I worked designing video cards, but these were specialized video cards, those that are used for movie industry, like for digital cinema or for even for theme parks. One of the cards that I designed ended up in Universal Studios for all their rides. Then I worked on a bunch of cards for camera manufacturers. And during this time, I was also volunteering for a charity in the Bay Area. It was called Shankarai Foundation. There's no relation to my name, but it's just called Shankarai Foundation in the Bay Area. And I met another volunteer there called Harshad. And Harshad Uka, he was an entrepreneur, and he was running a PCB manufacturing facility that used to make really hard to make PCBs, like flexible PCBs and really long PCBs. We were trying, you know, I was, and also at the same time, I met, Anand from Facebook is my schoolmate as well. So he had started a company. So I was very enamored with that entrepreneurship. So I kept asking, you know, trying to bounce ideas of Harshad. And we thought there was a market for using flexible PCBs in speakers. The technology has been known for a long time. It was planar drivers. Planar drivers are basically flexible PCBs in a magnetic field. So initial idea was to make speakers. It didn't take off. And then we started making a headphone. So that's how the company started.
So you were a chip designer working for these 3D card companies?
No, it was more the driver development, and it was all FPGA-based cards and specialized video cards for the movie industry.
Wow. So these days, you know, those kind of specialized cards are now available on our phones and like on our laptops, which is kind of amazing, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. And these cards used to sell for $10,000, $20,000 at the time to do 4K. This was way back in 2004. Where when 4K was just mostly R&D or big projector systems. But the market has completely changed now, and those things, everything can be done in software now.
You know, I remember like writing about 3D cards back in like 94 to 97 timeframe when Voodoo and S3 and all those companies were like, you know, the darlings of stock markets. And I look at those 3D graphics cards, and I look at what NVIDIA is doing now, and you kind of just say like, what a joke these guys were back in the day. And like, you know, technology definitely has come such a long way that, and, you know, that's the great thing about Moore's Law is that, you know, it keeps, it's a gift which keeps giving. Now, your lessons you learned from that era, for instance, like, you know, designing graphic cards and using software and FPGAs, has any of that carried over to your next phase of life as an entrepreneur?
Yes, certainly. In fact, Voodoo and other things bring back a lot of old memories. But one of the first companies I worked for was a company called Evans and Sutherland. They were probably the first computer graphics company in the world. My first job was at E&S in Salt Lake City. And I remember they used to make these humongous video cards and systems that for aircraft simulators. And I actually even seen a vector display there. It's a completely different world. But certainly one of the things that I took away from these things is we have to keep on innovating, because you can see a lot of companies try to do the same thing over and protect themselves. And that's something that we are very, very passionate about. And that's, you know, we want to try to push the fundamental technologies of planar audio as much as we can.
Right. So, you know, before we go further, explain to people who don't know what planar magnetic technology is, and like, how do you guys use it inside your headphones?
Sure.
And like, talk to me like I'm 5 years old.
No problem. Usually what the most of the headphones and speakers that you see use a cone speaker. That's the most common form of, common transducer that's used on headphones and, speakers. Planar magnetic technology is a slightly different version of speakers, where you have a bed of magnets. On top of the magnets, you have a very thin film. And the film itself is, we have a metal layer on it, which is etched. So you have a circuit on the very thin film. The film is stretched. And the magnetic field and when you send a signal through the circuit on the film, it interacts with the magnetic field and moves up and down and creates sound. There is also electrostatic technology that's similar, but it uses electrostatic force instead of planar magnetic force. So these are the three big types of transducers that you find. The fourth one is a balanced armature that you find now. So the planar magnetic technology itself allows you to create more accurate headphones, primarily because there is no breakup modes and everything in the audible range if you design it nicely. And the diaphragms are so thin that you can get amazing impulse response. The downside of planar headphones are they were very bulky, hard to drive because they were not very efficient. So we have been trying to see if we can push the field of planar magnetic technology forward. So we created a new type of magnetic circuit called fluxer that makes it a little bit more efficient. We try to make the films as thin as possible. We make our own film. We even have our own type of magnets that we use on our headphones. So these allow our headphones to be a lot more efficient, so you can drive it with the mobile phones. So we are trying to take the great sound of the planar headphones that they are capable of and try to make it more useful in the world where it's mobile first.
So, you know, when I first saw like Odyssey headphones, it was at a friend's house, and it was like he had a headphone amplifier and it was hooked up to his, you know, his computer. And it seems like these days you can get the planar magnetic headphones working right off my iPhone, for instance, or from my iMac or my iPad, and like I don't need any amplifiers. Like, what has changed in like last 5 years?
So, in terms of planar headphones, they have come quite a way in the last 5-6 years. We are now able to use much, much more thinner films for driving the transducer in the transducer. For example, one of the films that we use in our high-end headphones is about half a micron thick. Just to give you an idea, a human hair is about 20 to 30 microns thick. So we are able to take very thin films and handle them and etch them and make them usable in planar headphones. That's one reason the efficiency also has gone up. Second thing is also new types of magnetic circuits, magnets have evolved. So these are a combination of these things have made planar a little bit much more easier to use in the regular for regular audio, not just the audiophile purposes with an amplifier, but you can use it with your iPhone or even Bluetooth.
So now when you talk about this very thin film and very, specialized magnets, are there any big macro trends which allow you to make them cost effectively and at scale? I mean, are there any other markets which are driving the demand for thin film and specialized magnets, or is it just the headphone community driving the innovation?
No, I don't think the demand in headphone industry for these things is big. In fact, when we go to the thin film manufacturers, we have to, we are probably the smallest customers. Their big customers are the solar film and, other applications like that. But because, in fact, even the film that we use now was initially developed for space applications where they wanted to make sales with these films that were miles across. We use very tiny portions of it. But the research that was done for those purposes, basically we are piggybacking on them to get more efficient film. And also I believe the touchscreen industry and other things have driven the thin film industry forward.
Got it. So this is a combination of factors. So looking back when you were trying to, start your company and your speakers business didn't work out and you shifted gears to focus on headphones, it turned out to be the right bet over a longer period, stretch of time, I guess.
Correct. Yeah. And part of that is also because of the, in 2008, after the dot-com crash and stuff, a lot of these enthusiast forums started popping up, like HeadFi and other things that allowed us to go to a smaller niche audience easily. From day one, we started selling online. This is a small long tail market that we are targeting, and it was easy to get customers worldwide almost immediately. So part of the reason for Odyssey and other companies like Odyssey to start was HeadFi and forums like that helped us in that phase.
How big is Odyssey right now? It's what, 10 years on now?
Yes, we are 10 years on. We actually manufacture headphones here in our Orange County. So we have a factory in Orange County, California, where we actually manufacture these headphones. The total employee strength, I believe, is 52 now.
Right. So how many headphones do you guys sell every year?
I'm not fully sure. I think last year we shipped quite a few. It really depends because last year we introduced our smaller in-ears at a much lower price point. Our higher-end headphones, if you look at 2014, our headphones, the cheapest headphone we made was about $1,000. As we introduced new headphones and our market, the distribution channels increase, our volumes go up. This year we probably will do 2-3 times what volume we did last year.
So what I meant was you sell millions of units hundreds of thousands of units tens of thousands of units.
Yeah.
So how does that compare to somebody like Beats, which is just so massive? Mm-hmm. and Beats and Bose are two brands which essentially dominate people's minds and mind share, even though, some of their products are, I wouldn't like to use them.
Yeah. So Beats and Bose are, completely different, but they are massive. There's also Sennheiser in Europe. That's very big as well. What we see is, we are catering to a much more niche audience. My audience right now is three, I can put them in three big buckets. One is the audiophiles. And we have a very cult-like following in that audiophile space. We also sell a lot to the professional audio people like mixers, sound engineers, mastering engineers, people who make music in their bedrooms, right? You know, now it's easy for them to get very good quality listening experience instead of having to go to a studio. And the third one is technophiles, and other people are the first adopters. We hope to actually have a new product launched later this week, which will go into the gaming market. So we are trying to target more enthusiast crowds, enthusiast markets, so that we can easily market to them, address their concerns that they have the specialized requirements. So it's at least we can grow beyond our initial audiophile and pro audio space.
So when you talk about these three buckets, I kind of look at it, I'm not an insider and I barely know, all the mechanics of the headphones. All I know is when the headphone sounds great to me or not. And I look at the market today and I spent a lot of time researching you guys and I ended up on YouTube and I watched a lot of videos and it seems like the whole movement is now around headphones and nobody listens to music on speakers anymore. And so it seems like the whole music industry has to revolve around the headphy, buyer. There's so much talk about headphones being sold and, everything happening around headphones. I don't know. So I'm trying to understand is there a bigger cultural thing going on right now and that, we have not really glommed onto just yet?
No, I think headphone industry has been growing significantly over the last, I think it's driven primarily by the mobile phones and other things. So it's easier for almost everybody to now have and they have multiple headphones now. I think the market for other things in speakers are growing as well. For example, the smart speakers like Alexa and the home pods and stuff. The other category, I think all that's growing is also soundbars as people go for thinner TVs. The old two-channel speaker market is shrinking slightly. And I think primarily because of space and people's lives have changed. The people coming together to have a social, life over listening and other things are going away. And more of the youngsters are using headphones and mobile phones from very young age. So I think that is the primary change that we are seeing.
You have any theories on if the headphone centric and smart speaker centric, music listening behavior will change how music is made and what we think of high fidelity?
I'm not sure the way recording music and things that are done today will change. However, headphones offer, because the drivers are so close to your ear and you can get a very high fidelity drivers now, the sound engineers and mixers and everybody are starting to use headphones as a safety check. So, for example, if you're listening to a mix and you hear slight comb artifacts or, comb filter artifacts and stuff, it's very easy to pick them on a headphone. In a big speaker system, you will not be able to pick it up because of the room reflections and the delays. So, the growing markets for us is all the sound engineers and mixers who have started using our headphones in their workflow. I think more people listen to headphones, so they want to know how it'll sound on a headphone eventually. I'm not fully convinced that the recording techniques and everything will change in the traditional way they do recording and mixing. However, on the other side, now gaming, music composers do gaming audio. So there's a lot of object-based audio and 360 audio techniques and other things coming up. So Sennheiser, for example, has put in a lot of effort into the binaural headphones that can record binaural audio. So we think a lot of 3D audio and other things that are easy to deliver over headphones will start coming through in the next few years.
How much do you think, the computational audio will become, you know, part of our lives. I mean, I look at HomePod and, you know, yes, you know, it hasn't gotten the love, you know, most Apple devices get, but I just am astounded by the amount of compute they have put into it and how quickly the HomePod adapts to your local environment. And I look at that and just like, this has to be the coming wave, you know, the way sound is going to be, you know, created and, you know, listened to in the future. I don't know. What's your thought on that?
I think that's totally true. You know, the chipsets are getting more and more powerful. The amount of computation that you can do is becoming easier to do with also because all the chipsets, you know, if you look at the chipset manufacturing timelines of what they're planning to release, a lot of new things are coming, which all the speaker manufacturers and headphone manufacturers will be able to use and adapt. If you look at three, four years ago, most of the microphones for voice pickup, they used to be in laptops, like beamforming microphones and stuff. But now with Alexa coming, everything has Alexa and the HomePods, everything has these mic arrays. And if you see, there's a lot more companies involved in that area now. It's easier to develop from a speaker manufacturer or a headphone manufacturer perspective to do this. We have started, you know, from the 2013-14, we started a completely separate division at Odyssey just to do signal processing and other things. So last year, we released a product that just would help sound mixers and engineers use headphones and try to see how it'll sound in a studio, for example. This year, we are releasing the new headphone that has tons and tons of processing and DSP related things that try to do all the psychoacoustics for 3D positioning of audio. It tracks your head movements. It tracks, it does first order room reflections in a headphone to create an illusion of 3D audio. All these things are becoming easier to implement and pull off. I think it's the same thing with speakers. You have room, you want to measure the room and make these things easier, better sounding and easier for the user to create the, to remove the friction for the users to get good sound. All these things will become easier and more available across the board, I think.
I mean, isn't that like the big challenge for all the established brands now is, I mean, they are essentially selling last generation idea of music and, you know, in like the two channel speakers or, you know, people like, you know, Bang & Olufsen selling those, you know, connected speakers which use Bluetooth when this has become really a game of, you know, like, you know, dynamic signal processing. I think computational audio is the simplest way to talk about it, thanks to, and like it just needs a whole different level of skill. I mean, like, what happens to these players of the, like, you know, these massive brands who've been, you know, chugging along for so many years making devices?
I think they will adapt. Many, some of them will adapt, some of them will, you know, not adapt. But if you look at big brands, I see a lot of people, you know, for example, Bose introduced the AR glasses yesterday at South by Southwest with positional audio. It has a gyroscope and an accelerometer. Sennheiser introduced a new speaker with beamforming for audio at CES. So some of these new things will come, and many of these companies have resources. But for a small company like Odyssey, this is crucial because we don't have the money to spend on marketing. You know, we can't spend money to make 15 different colorways, for example, because of inventory management. So for us, it's very crucial that we are little bit ahead of the market in terms of new things. We try to, and also because we are small, we can take a little bit more risk and create more cutting edge products. So we are trying to do these things to see if we can use them as a tool for marketing for us.
Now, when you started the company and, you know, you started using, like, you know, you said you were a niche product and you worked with folks who were on forums and sold direct to the market through the internet. Like, since, like, take me through your early years, so like 4 or 5 years of Odyssey, and like, what were the challenges you faced, and like, how did you overcome them?
Sure. Odyssey actually was the totally four people who started it. Me, Harshad, who helped us with all the thin film processing initially, Harshad Uka. He runs a company called QFlix. Then we also had Alex Rosen, who was my friend, who joined us in the initial days, and he was with us till 2014. And Dragoslav Solic. Dragoslav was a big speaker designer. He had a lot of experience designing speakers and things. So these are the four people who joined. But none of us were full-time at Odyssey. Pete had his own company. And I also come from a middle-class family in India. So, you know, even though I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I was also afraid of making the jump. I had seen Anand make the jump very quickly, and I had seen Pete, but it was still something, you know, I was earning a lot of money designing video cards, and it was a little bit scary. So till 2009 to 2013, the company, we ran the company part-time. So almost everybody except Dragoslav became a full-time employee a little bit sooner, but none of us became employees. Pete never became an employee. He had his own company. So in 2013, we had grown significantly and we were able to make the jump to full-time. And then we also started making a little bit more mainstream products. Till that point, all we had was products for the audiophile industry. So we decided that we also needed to make good design because the first products were basically designed in our garage. There was no industrial design. The reason we started using wood was because we had no money to make plastic injection molding. So we started using wood because it was cheaper to make a wood ring. So in 2013, we had used specialty retailers like audiophile dealers and stuff, and we had grown a little bit. So we had a partnership with BMW Design in Thousand Oaks here. So they helped us design new headphones with the EL8 and the Sign and the iSign products. So that's how we changed. And in late 2014-15, we started doing a lightning cable for Apple because, you know, we were trying to see how do we make these very inefficient planar headphones be usable on the mobile phones and other things. We also wanted good quality sound. And we thought with the USB and Lightning coming along, we might be able to use the digital connections to these things. So when we made a Lightning cable for our headphones, Apple noticed it and they gave us a little bit of opening and put us in a lot of stores. That gave us a little bit more bigger profile and we were able to expand a little bit more.
Yeah. Wow. And like, but so far the company is completely bootstrapped. You haven't taken any outside capital?
No, we have two strategic investors in the company.
Okay. Can you tell us who they are?
We haven't publicly announced their presence, so I'm not sure. I have to ask them.
Okay. So, wow, that's pretty. Is that helped with the expansion of the company?
Correct. The first funding we took actually helped us establish the factory here because part of the problem that we had was, we wanted to manufacture a little bit so that we could control it and we could see some of the things that we do with research are fundamental, like thin film. How do we process the thin film? How do we make them? Because there's nobody who has done this before, especially with the new types of magnetic circuits. So we started the factory here to make the transducers and drivers and the film and the etching. So that's how we got the funding initially.
Got it. Well, let me ask you some questions which go a little bit, from an average person's standpoint. What makes a headphone worth $1,000 in your mind?
It's just the quality of the sound, you know. So from an Odyssey perspective, you know, we price the products based on depending upon how good we the quality of audio that we can deliver. We also have tried to, for different, some markets, it's easier to have a product, but some other markets like gaming, a $1,000 product will be very unattractive. So, but there is no correlation between the price of a headphone and the performance in the general overall market. There are bad sounding expensive headphones, there's also good sounding cheap headphones. So I don't think the price and performance are directly correlated. In fact, I think Harman even published a paper on it recently.
So what should one look for when buying a headphone?
I think our philosophy at Odyssey has been, if can we reproduce good sound, the sound like you would hear it in a well-treated, now nice-sounding speakers in a room. So what I look for in a headphone is, does it have good sound stage? Does it have a good balance? We think, boosting the bass too much or treble too much is basically going against the intention of the content creator, is our philosophy. So if you want to create a very balanced, a very good sounding headphone, it's with the market as crowded as this, it's very difficult for consumers, especially if they are not trained, to figure out which is good sound, which is bad sound. So,
but it seems like, again, I hear this from a lot of audiophile experts, that it should sound great. Now, you look at a world where everybody is actually listening to those cheap, white, headphones which come with the phone, and that's their idea of, what is audio quality, and they think it's good enough. So, convincing somebody to go from that to, let's say, even a $300 headphone is actually a huge, huge step up. And let's say somebody decides to step up. My question here is that, what should they be thinking about when buying a headphone like that? What should they be, trying to buy when stepping up? I mean, I think there are two questions here. One is, I think it's easier to say that, quality is what is going to drive the demand, but it's very hard to actually justify what is quality for people who don't know what quality is on a headphone.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's where the biggest problem even for Odyssey comes in, is how do we actually show people, or how do we actually have people try headphones and see what the quality difference is? Fortunately for us, when people wear our headphones, we have been able to show them there is a big quality difference. And part of the reason we are trying to have these in display at the Apple stores and everywhere is for us to be able to show it to them. I think the easiest way for people to see is that they can A/B test these headphones to see which one they like. And most people, if you look at the research, especially from Harman, most people are able to discern good quality when they listen to headphones. And they actually have even some AES papers on it, that most people prefer a headphone frequency response that's more or less neutral.
So, one of the things which, again, I'm not an expert, when I was trying to research and buy a pair of headphones, I actually, whenever I went on the Headfi forums or any other place, I always felt everybody was talking down to me as a consumer, in a sense that they had their own secret language. And, I'm technically pretty, okay. I can read a lot of papers and figure out what all these things is. But at no point it was clear to me that, this is how you actually make a choice of a headphone, which is kind of a really strange thing to say, that if I decide to spend a couple of $100, maybe $500 on a pair of headphones, I actually just got the Uber geek speak, the nerd speak you get with the headphones, and never really hey, this is what you should be, these are the four or five things you should look for.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting process to go through.
Yeah, I think the forums also tend to be a little bit acerbic and hard to navigate, but there are a lot of headphone reviewers coming up. But also the other thing that's happening is, in the headphone reviewers by themselves, as a lot of, measuring headphones is a little bit more complicated than measuring speakers. So in speakers, you can just say, hey, the flat frequency response is the best. But in headphones, the headphone measurements are a lot more complex. So you have dummy heads, you have artificial ears, you have artificial ear canals, all those things. So it was very difficult to even create a curve of frequency response curve of the headphones, but the prices of these measurement rigs are coming down. So a lot more headphone enthusiasts and reviewers are getting measurement rigs, and some of the research from Harman on ideal headphone response curves is taking hold in the headphone community. I'm pretty sure in the next year or so, there will be a lot more things that are standardized, and you'll be able to compare one headphone versus another to see which one has more balance. Or, for example, there are certain use cases where you might want to have more bass or, you know, more presence in the vocal region for voice over IP applications. So I think you'll be able to get at least information on these things easily, because most reviewers are starting to get these measurement tricks as the prices come down.
Yeah. You know, one of the things which I found really strange about the buying the headphone experience is that more or less you have to go online to buy it, like a really decent headphone, except you don't know what it sounds like. And so you get it, you bring it home, or like you get shipped to you, you open the box and you listen to it and you're kind of stuck with it. And I think that's just like such a big challenge at times as an end customer.
I completely agree. And this is one of the reasons we actually actively put our headphones in the demo area of the Apple stores, if it is possible. But there is a company called Cable Company, who is one of our dealers, who actually have a home tryout program. There was another small company in Bay Area that unfortunately closed down recently. That also offered free home tryout for headphones. So you can get 5 or 6 headphones, try which one you like, and then buy the one that you like. So, you know, with at least in the US, we have Apple, maybe Best Buy, and there's almost no retail channel besides Amazon. So it's becoming more and more difficult. Worldwide, there are still some mid-level places where you can go try headphones. But I, again, with all the e-commerce sites, I'm not sure if the trend will continue. On the other side of things, because there is no places to try these things, the headphone enthusiasts and the HiFi people have started doing small trade shows in almost all the big cities. So we had one recently in New York. There is one in Los Angeles next month. And this is a great place, they are called CanJam. And this is a great place for you to go and try hundreds of different headphones, high-end headphones, all the cheap ones as well. It's run by HiFi. It's called CanJam. There is one in Singapore, one in Shanghai, one in Berlin or Munich, and one in and a few in the US.
I mean, you know, something like that would be like, or maybe even, you know, you guys having your own pop-up stores is an interesting idea. I know Sennheiser opened a store in San Francisco. And I haven't had a chance to go, but I'm actually not a big fan of their sound, just my ears, you know, like how they are. It's nothing, no knock on their quality, just it didn't sound great to me when I actually listened to it. So it just is.
So to have the pop-up stores, the price point is also have to be attractive for people to make an, you know, buy. Till recently, our price points have been a little bit higher. But as we introduce new headphones, especially the new Mobius headphone, we are planning to have more pop-up stores and stuff. In fact, last Saturday, we had one in Hollywood just for a day. We plan to have one more in New York next month, just for a few days, yeah.
Right. So like, let's talk about the mainstreaming of the headphone culture. Now, a lot of the people experience headphones and they end up opting for what are essentially the fashion brands in headphones, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have
Beats and Skullcandy.
Beats and Skullcandy, and if you want to go super high end design, you buy Master and Dynamic and Shinola and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. What's your thought on these fashion brands as headphones? And like, what do they mean in terms of, you know, as a competitive threat to you guys? And like, are there any good fashion headphones which are actually good?
Yeah. I see this also in gaming, for example. There's a lot of headphones in gaming that look really outlandish and with 16 million colors and 15 million color LEDs in them. So there are two different things I see. One is the use case based headphones. For example, certain applications require certain use cases like voice over IP or gaming. You need microphones like boom microphones, and they even have specialized things like mute for microphone. But I see fashion headphones as one of these categories. People want to show off that they have nicer looking headphones compared to others. Master and Dynamic makes some really cool looking headphones. There's also Prima from it, I believe an Italian company that makes really, really good looking headphones. Adele from France. We see this as a trend. I think it's going to become more, there's going to be more of these small companies coming up as well. It certainly works for a certain customer base, and some of their headphones actually sound good as well. For example, the Master and Dynamic headphones, some of them sound good for the price point. From an Odyssey perspective, we certainly want good design, but our primary focus has been uncompromised sound quality first. So that's our unique selling. That's basically what we have focused at Odyssey. So we design comes after sound quality for us. But I certainly see why people would buy certain good looking headphones, because it makes them feel good.
Why won't you make such headphones? I mean, combining quality and design, that's a slam dunk waiting to happen.
Yeah, right? We work on these things very diligently. For example, the EL8, the Sign, and the iSign headphones were designed by BMW Design for us. It's called DesignWorks USA, a BMW company. BMW has a division here that does all the electric cars, the i3, the i8 design, and we actually use them to design the. Use them to design the EL8 and the Sign and the iSign headphones. But our primary goal, as we established ourselves, was we wanted to make sure they also sound pristine. We made the first on-ear planar headphones. We made the first in-ear planar headphones. So we wanted to, there is a lot of physical issues making planar smaller and lighter. We wanted to get great sound quality. That's what we are known for. We didn't want to compromise on the sound quality for design. So we concentrate on it, but not just a headphone that just looks good. We want to make sure they also sound great.
Right. I was talking to a friend of mine, and she was complaining about the fact that most of the headphones are essentially made, for men by men. And they're very masculine in the way they look. She had a point. I looked around and was like, wow, she's so right. Everything just looks just kind of, very macho in the headphone industry. And do you agree with that?
I think so. Especially if you go to gaming headphones and stuff, some of them are really outlandish also. But there is other companies that are entering that market because they see an opening there. Prima, for example, they look gorgeous. I believe Beyonce wore one on the song Lemonade, the Prima headphone. There are companies taking notice of it and designing headphones for that as well.
Right. It's an interesting time, right? I remember when the boom boxes just became a thing, and they were everywhere and everybody had to have one. I don't know. I grew up in India and I remember getting one from BPL Sanyo. There was a brand called BPL Sanyo.
Yeah, we had BPL Sanyo as well in our house.
It's it was just such a huge deal. That was a big day in my family's house. And we have our own tape deck with radio and speakers, and boom boxes were a thing. And now it seems headphones are a thing, right? I think I'm just seriously amazed by how quickly everything is changing. I think the phone has just redefined our relationship with so many things which were static in our lives. The music was a very static presence, radio or... But yes, there was a Walkman and we would listen to music on our Walkman. But I think the mobile phone really changed what music means to us now.
Yeah, and I think it also you know, I have a 3-year-old daughter. And, you know, from the day she was born, we have always had an Alexa in our house. And you can see the blue LED going whenever it's listening, right? So I took her, you know, we went to a restaurant, the Olive Garden, you know, and they give you these buzzers when you wait. And she's, you know, when the buzzer started going off, my daughter noticed that the LEDs on it were going in circles. They were red LEDs. So she comes and says, "Daddy, look, Alexa." So they think everything is, you know, they you know, everything has to talk to them. And she goes to the TV and thinks it's a touchscreen and tries to move the icons on Netflix. So the, you know, the change is so rapid that, you know, when people post those things on Facebook saying, "Did you know how we used to use a tape recorder?" These kids don't have, never will never see these things, and it's rapidly changing. It also gives us great opportunity. You know, we can try new things, and it's very interesting times.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a chance to start over in my mind. I think the big challenge from an innovation standpoint is the disruption which comes with the changing generation. I think most people underscore that shift. Right now, you have so many kids who have grown up natively on the internet, and then there is another, you know, generation which has grown up completely on mobile, and another one which is growing up with touch and voice interfaces. And, you know, and here we are worried about making products to basically fit the needs of a generation which is essentially dying. You know, it's like, like people like me are like yesterday's news, right? Like,
and even I feel that way.
Like, and it just is like how, you know, the constant dilemma of, you know, being in technology is just that. It's like you worry about the present too much when the future is something which is completely going to be rewritten by people who we just don't even take into the equation,
into consideration. Yeah, for example, one of the things that as we launch our gaming headphone, we noticed was the music in gaming games is now amazing. Some of the audio in games is amazing, and you have mainstream composers working on games now. We have, you know, I met with Tyler Bates, who is the composer for Guardians of the Galaxy and Deadpool, the new one. He did the 300 movie, and he works on game audio design as well. So the audio, you know, and many of the kids go in, and if you go in and see Jeremy Soule's audio for Skyrim and stuff, the audio is amazing. And these kids, you know, I say kids, but, you know, the average age of a gamer in the US is now 34. They consume these things. And we were trying different games to see which games to demo using our headphones. And we saw a game called Hellblade from a company called Ninja Theory in the UK. Absolutely amazing audio. It's also the form of entertainment, how they consume, where they consume also is changing with these things. It's not just the devices and stuff, but also how they consume.
So what happens in the future with this computational audio? Like if you were to make a guess as to, you know, right now we have HomePod. What happens in 2 years from now or 5 years from now to the music landscape, to the headphones and to the speaker landscape? What does the overall audio market look like in the future?
It's very difficult. You know, I don't want to make predictions because it makes you always look dumb 2 years from now. But it, you know, you can see the trends in terms of chipset manufacturers and stuff. They're putting so much of these chipsets that are coming out next year or the year after with biometrics and sensors and other things, and they're all becoming integrated low power devices. If, for example, if I wanted to build a headphone for Bluetooth with noise cancellation, I had to use this chipset for noise cancellation, one chipset for Bluetooth. Now this year I can buy one chipset that does a lot of these things. And also they have plenty of DSP power. So I think from the headphone perspective, headphones will get smarter. There will be a lot more 3D audio, especially because of all the AR applications that can be using these directional audio and for games as well. From a HomePod and speaker business, they will continue to become smarter, you know, smarter and easier to use. Everybody has to jump on the bandwagon of smart speakers sooner or later.
So what are we not getting about the smart speaker market in your mind? Do you think it is like, you know, underhyped right now?
I think there is a small difficulty for especially for bigger companies that make expensive speakers and stuff. The smart speaker, I believe people think of them as gadgets that they might have to replace every 18 months or 24 months. I'm not sure because it's also a new market. It's very difficult to gauge. The big speakers and expensive speakers, we need to have a bridge on how, you know, the speaker technology doesn't change as fast as the, as fast as the computational devices. So we have to figure out if there is a modular way we can build these things where you can have the speaker, but you can just replace the smarts. Otherwise, the price point will be a big difficult factor for people because it's, if you make $1,000 smart speaker, that sounds really good. It's very difficult for people to change it after 18 months because the smartness has been, there's a new version of the smart speaker technology.
Now, before we go, I wanted to ask you about the things you've learned as an entrepreneur since 2013 when you went full-time into this business.
You know, I think one of the things that I've learned is, you know, we have to go on our own path. We can't just try to ape other people. We can't just be, you know, Beats did this or other people did this. You know, we have to see what our strengths are and basically concentrate on what we can do the best and see if, you know, if we can execute on it. The biggest problem, the biggest thing that I see is execution. You know, from I see a lot of amazing people who come up with great ideas and, you know, even headphones and other places where I see in terms of execution, it's lacking and it basically fizzles out. So, you know, if we can, you know, the other proud thing is also feature creep. It's very interesting, especially with these times, to say, hey, let's add this feature, that feature, and that feature, and eventually you don't ship at all. So those are the things that I try to limit ourselves. Okay, this is what we want to do. This is what we can pull off. Let's make it instead of making too many ambitious things that we cannot deliver.
Right. Now, is like in your last 5 years working full-time, what has been the biggest challenge? What have you come to, you know, kind of like almost, like you just said, you know what, this could break our company. What was, have you had that moment?
Yes, when we basically had one product where we started shipping and we realized, you know, we could not, you know, the headphones were breaking after we ship because, you know, we didn't consider a different type of drop testing. So we, you know, it took us a while to regroup. We say, okay, hey, our product is good, but we have to learn from these things and make sure that, you know, the people who buy our product need to make, you know, we can't ship things that have, you know, we have to basically make sure that we have to much bigger test things that we have to do. And the other thing that we have, I come from a small company, you know, E&S was a big company that I worked for, but all the other companies have been very small. So one of the other things I have to learn is, how to deal with people. And as we grow, there's a lot of friction that comes in and the egos that come in. So that was the big thing that we had to deal with, was how do you really deal, you know, when people, their perception of things are different and they want to do it their own way.
Right. Now, there is a couple of things which are always, as a founder, you always worry about and always debate about. One of them is that you have a couple of products which are super successful, and then you want to add more products to the mix, and you don't know if you should or you shouldn't because the cost of doing so is so high. Like, mm-hmm. You know, how have you dealt with the expansion from your, you know, essentially your two or three very, very core products, the LCD2 and LCD, what the other?
Yeah, LCD.
Yeah, and like those were like super expensive, you know, products. And then you went into iSign, which has been essentially like in comparison to the LCD2 is definitely a budget product.
Yeah. So some of these things, and fortunately, I have had the same group of developers and engineers since the beginning, right? So we are the same group of six people, and all of us are engineers. So it has been easy, you know, from a development perspective, it has been easy because Karthik, who runs our signal processing stuff, is also a assistant professor at Texas A&M, where he teaches machine learning. So then we have Dragoslav College, who has years of experience developing speakers. So from a product development perspective, it has been easy. We have tried a lot of different products. In fact, we have shelved a lot of products, like the microphone, like 3D microphones, because we didn't think the market was big enough. So we have been trying to balance the creative stuff that we can do and new things we can come up with to say, no, this is not a product that we want to market. And the other thing that is also helping us is we launched this, in things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, we can launch things on there to see if there is demand. We don't have to launch every product by ourselves. We can make 99% of the product, go to Indiegogo or Kickstarter, try this and see if there is demand, and then release the production. The biggest cost for us is not the development cost, but the inventory and the manufacturing stuff, because once you make it, if it doesn't sell, you are like Snapchat with spectacles. You are holding all the products and that inventory. So development is relatively quick for us from start to finish. It's very quick and not that expensive. The problem is for us the estimating the demand. That's very difficult.
Is that why you manufacture locally in the U.S.?
Part of it, yes. We started manufacturing locally. Two reasons. One was because the thin film manufacturing is also local for us, and we can't really ship these things before they are put inside a headphone because of the how thin they are. That was one reason. And the second thing was also the LCD headphones and stuff, and the higher end headphones have a very limited market. You know, they're not your everyday headphone. So we want, you can't really go big on those things because they don't have Bluetooth, they don't have noise cancellation, and they don't have the creature comfort factors that people want. So we try to make them here. But with the newer products, we will partially manufacture here, partially manufacture it overseas to make sure we can take advantage of both things, both places.
Okay, before you go, I have, what are your favorite headphones from your own product line, and mm-hmm. what are the other headphones you would recommend both at entry level and at the mid level? I know the best you would obviously say Audiz is the best.
Yeah, I mean, of course. There's also other people who say that, not just me. There are some people who even, we do draw enemies with their headphones and have tattoos of our headphones. But the best headphone that we make is the LCD4. But if you are into mixing or very unique critical listening, it's probably the best headphone in the world. It is a super thin diaphragm. The most fun headphone I have had making a headphone, and the one headphone that I really love, is a new Audizy Mobius. It will launch on Wednesday, 14th. It has a bunch of new features like 3D audio, head tracking, you can turn all those things. It'll be a standard Audizy headphone, but you turn all those things on and it becomes a really immersive headphone. Watching a movie with it is just incredible. There's a lot of good companies that make headphones as well. There's a small company in Oregon called Campfire Audio. They make really good in-ears. Sennheiser makes a lot of good headphones as well. For a budget headphone, there's inner fidelity is a very good website where they have a bunch of very critical reviews on headphones, innerfidelity.com. It's run by Tyle Hurtensens. It's a good place to start with. He has a wall of fame, and different headphones are ranked based on how good they are from an audiophile perspective.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sankar, and good luck with Mobius, the headphones for gamers, and I look forward to our future conversations. Thank you for your insights and education. That was really helpful for a noob like me.
Thank you, Om. And next time I come up here to come to Bay Area, I'll definitely come and show you the Mobius.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye.